Iowa, Des Moines. You waited for it, you wanted it, and now you got it. The entire We're Not Wrong crew is decamping to caucus country, and we have a live show for you, and we finally have the details on it. It will take place on caucus eve. That is Sunday, January 14th. We'll be in the Des Moines area at Back Pocket, Pin and Pixel at 8 p.m. We're all going to be there. The Yankee Doodle Panther, the Bi-Coastal Elitist, me, your Everglades-born gremlin, Justin Robert Young, Andrew Heaton, Jen Briney. We want to see all the PX3 people, all the Congressional Dish people, all the political orphanage people, and it is for free. Again, that is 8 p.m. at Back Pocket, Pin and Pixel on Sunday, January 14th. We can't wait to see everybody there. More hats to Iowa.
Wait, so this is next week?
Uh-huh.
I like turn 40
6
next
days
week.
From now.
Can't imagine. Shit, do we need to do a pre-taped Great Night?
Oh, yeah, because it's on Tuesday, yeah.
Unless, depends on when it gets going. When do you?
I will swing by later tonight. I'll find out.
Yeah, we might just push it earlier. Like, do it at 6 to 7, and then
I would figure if you get there by 8, yeah, you'd probably be fine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I assume for my 40th, it's going to go to like
2.
Yeah, I was going to say 10 or 11, maybe midnight.
Okay.
Yeah, probably midnight.
I guess we party differently.
Yeah.
My 40th birthday was 2 weeks long, so, you know.
That's right. Didn't you have like a 40th birth fortnight in Mexico or something?
So we did New Orleans. It was actually for my cousin's 50th, but like I was involved. And then I went on a cruise, got quite sick actually. But yeah, it was like a 2 week long thing. So you can stay up till then.
Yeah. I mean, I usually stay up till around midnight, so I should be fine. And I'll be drinking and with friends and things. We've got a couple friends coming in.
The angle we had before was much better.
Fuck me, running.
Why did you change it?
What do you mean change it?
We had one where it was like all three of us.
Oh, the other camera?
Yeah.
What we might do, Justin?
You guys were talking, and so we went to you.
Why don't we just leave it?
Or we could talk to me. Or we can go to that.
Why don't we just leave it on the three of us?
For dynamic.
He goes back and forth all the time. You know this?
Okay. I don't like it, but okay.
You don't like cameras
it's
changing?
Good. It's
not
good.
Not really, no.
For why?
Wait, so when you watch sitcoms and it goes back and forth between characters, do you go, God, stop that.
No.
Just have one big pan shot.
This isn't a sitcom, though. It's like three people talking. So to have like the camera
this
on like some people and then other, like, I don't know. I kind of like being able to see who's looking at who and what faces you're making.
See, I like to pretend that I live in a sitcom.
You can just be in the moment. This is for them. This is for other people.
I know. My comment is for them so that they can see the interaction between all three of us. Instead of like when you're talking, when I roll my eyes, when you're talking, they can't see that. Do whatever you want, but I
what about
I like
when I get
shot.
An erection? Does that show up?
It would in this shot, yes.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Just pretend, audio listeners.
Anyway, we're doing a live show that I'm sure Jen will bitch about. It's going to be Sunday night in Iowa. We'll have details. It'll hopefully be at the beginning of this episode.
Well, I should plug that on my show now.
Are we recording right now?
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
That's fun.
Any other grievances you want to get off your chest?
I thought it was just the three of us. I didn't realize I was like saying this to the world.
Why are there so many USB plugs? Why can't we just have one kind?
The honest to God truth
I don't like the lights.
I look fat in the other one. I like the way I look in this shot. That is
so
the truth.
You don't like that one.
I do not. No.
Because you're wearing a gigantic coat.
Yes, because I look like the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man. I look like I'm going to attack New York today.
I look like I'm in a 1960s PSA. This is great.
I'm taking out all of the monitors.
No, this is fucking fantastic.
I'm taking out all of the monitors. I built this whole fucking studio.
And I love it.
No, you don't.
Yes,
you're
do.
many cameras.
Oh my God. I've told you so many times that I love it.
Justin, I want a camera so I can get a close up at a camera.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Where's the camera that's only on me? Why do you get the single one? We love you.
Again, I'm very happy with this shot. I feel like if anything, I should have a cigarette because again, I like this one. 1960s PSA. I like it.
I think it is good. It does look good. It does look good. We do need to probably work on the color balance a bit, but you guys are too white. That's the problem.
It is the problem.
You guys are very, very white.
Are you going to make me play the skin cancer card?
I saw Hamilton.
Again?
What more do you want from me?
Oh shit. I don't even know where to start. Where do we start? We had a bunch of really good conversation before. You're scared about Iowa. You're scared about the temperatures in Iowa.
Well, yeah, every time I check, they go lower and lower.
Why do you keep checking?
Because I want to be prepared mentally and physically and clothes-wise. Like, the problem with traveling to cold weather places, keeping in mind that like I don't have cold weather clothes, is that to pack two sweaters and two pairs of boots, that's my entire suitcase. So I don't know what to bring to go for a week and a half to Iowa and New Hampshire back to back. Like, I'm going to stink by the end of it because I'm only going to have two sweaters. It just complicates things. In the summer, I have 15 dresses. They all fit in the carry-on. It's just easier.
Jennifer.
I just don't like the fucking cold.
Jennifer, as your friend, this obsession you have with weather and climate, oh, I think, my is doing
fucking
no
God.
I know.
I think you need to just take.
I'm glad I have three cameras so my suicide can fucking be captured at multiple angles.
I know. Between the two of us, it has to just be perfect at all time.
I'm Justin Robert Young from Austin, Texas.
I'm Andrew Heaton.
And I'm Jennifer Briney.
And we're not wrong on this edition of the program. We're going to talk about the Epstein list and Texas power companies not being liable for delivering power, as well as your emails. I'm thrilled about Iowa.
I can tell.
I am so excited. I am absolutely juiced to the gills.
Keep telling me to be excited about a pizza ranch.
Yeah. Get pumped.
We are going to participate as journalists in a rite of passage in American democracy.
I mean, here's the one
in a pizza ranch.
The one. Okay. Yes. In a pizza ranch. I know that you are clad all in white, but you don't need to be Cruella DeVille at this moment. yes, that is indeed where the hoi polloi gather. But the one thing I do think you will be very happy about, that will make you happy, unlike the other political event that I took you to in a parking lot in an industrial warehouse district in Nevada, is that everybody in Iowa that you will interact with will have an opinion on politics and will very nice and politely explain what their position is and in ranking order who they are supporting.
Can I just go up to random people and say, I'm a journalist, can I talk to you? And you can I do that everywhere?
You can just skip the I'm a journalist part.
Oh, really?
They'll know.
So the extrovert part of me is going to light the fuck up.
Oh, no. My favorite thing is...
And the gentle farmer Plains American bit too.
You go to a bar or a restaurant and you just say, they're going to know that we're not from Iowa immediately. Mm-hmm. They can mark us from 50 paces. And you just say, oh, so who are you caucusing for? And they will, like ChatGPT, just rip out an answer that will involve positions and who they met and what they thought about them and whether or not they had a firm handshake. Like, they are dialed in on this process. It matters so much to them.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm a dive bar kind of girl. It's not the pizza ranch that I'm not looking forward to. I just think the whole thing is going to depress me. Because Vegas, when we went to that big rig parking lot and saw politicians yell at their biggest fans, give them no bathroom or anything to eat, and then be like, bye,
all
we got to do
people.
Fox
all
News.
10 people I think
what which we are, they had plenty of time to meet every single one of them and didn't bother. And I was like, if this is how we're running our democracy, we're fucked. And so that's what I'm afraid of, is going to Iowa and being like, this is not how we should be doing these things. I'm afraid it's going
to
depress me.
But there's only one way to find out.
I think so. I think you will see democracy and become very depressed about democracy, yes.
house.
That's my fear. At least there'll be pizza, though.
There'll be pizza.
Well, no. That's, again, I honestly believe the only two places in America to view democracy and not be depressed are Iowa and New Hampshire once every 4 years.
I think you should think of it like this. You are going to meet the most educated, informed, and active voters anywhere in the entire country.
Yes.
And if you don't like what they're saying, you should be very deeply depressed because it's not going to get better anywhere else.
Well, I will say that is if you guys wind up making the four early states, right now you are locked in for two of them. But if you do all four of them, you will notice, like in the Michael Keaton comedy Multiplicity, the copy of a copy of a copy gets dumber and dumber and dumber. Like it starts in Iowa and they are. These people have been the candidates have been coming there. They've been shaking hands. They've been making eye contact. All the TLC that was not there in that Vegas parking lot. The candidates have been doing that for a year. Some of them longer than that. They've been coming in and learning everybody's cat's name for a very long time. Ron DeSantis did the full Grassley, 99 counties, and his poll trap, which meant that people didn't like him. Mm-hmm. But he has been doing it. They have been putting in the work. New Hampshire, a little bit, like 75% of it. Nevada, not at all. And then South Carolina, it will be a freak show if what might happen happens and Nikki Haley upsets Trump in New Hampshire. That will be an actual super exciting primary in South Carolina.
And I do like the ribs.
The ribs,
South Carolina.
The ribs are pretty good. And that was the weird thing about South Carolina. The last time I was there was for a Democratic primary, which is
it's not happening.
Yeah, that's not happening, but it's not a blue state. Oh, also New Hampshire, we do get the Will Biden embarrass himself because he decided to fumble around with the Democratic primary structure.
They're still doing a write-in campaign for Biden.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Now we haven't seen any like polls that show Dean Phillips doing particularly well, but we don't know. Could be a big surprise.
Is Marianne Williamson running there as well?
I believe she's on the ballot. So yeah, there's going to be a lot more people to see in New Hampshire.
I would love to go. You know what? I've heard things about Marianne Williamson. I'm unfamiliar with her. I'd love to go to her rally, see what that's like.
I've watched her online. I like her. She's smart and she's not as woo-woo as the reputation deserves. Like her politics align with mine pretty well.
And also in New Hampshire, all the buildings are older. And so it feels like I went to an Amy Klobuchar rally.
It's a beautiful state. It's like Yankee Narnia.
Did you come to the Klobuchar rally with me?
No.
Okay. So it was in a church somewhere, but there was an overflow upstairs. And they were basically just watching or listening to Amy Klobuchar's speech. But whenever they wanted to cheer, they would all stamp their feet and it was like intense. And this is Amy Klobuchar who did not like, but she had
the electric. Amy Klobuchar. She had the neon candidate from Minnesota.
She had Klobmentum at the time and it felt super intense. Like you can get swept up in it. People are into it.
Okay.
I know. Non-believer.
Yeah.
But we will convert you.
I mean, it can't get much worse than the first one you took me to. I mean, that was just so depressing.
That one depressed you so much, you drank so viciously, you quit drinking.
It's true.
That was the last thing that happened right before you were like, all right, nope, I can't handle this.
Yeah, we were driving back and it was like, where's the other one? We were supposed to see some other senator. And then,
Cortez Masto, who ended up winning. Yeah.
Who just didn't have
one. And she didn't have an event.
Yeah. So I was like, so can we go and get blacked out now? Can we do that? And we did.
And lo, we did.
Yeah.
To set expectations, Jen, what would a good Democratic experience in Iowa look like to you? If you walked away and you went, I am invigorated with American democracy and the political process, what would it look like to have a positive outcome?
I honestly don't even know. Like, I'm so jaded right now. Like, that. I don't know. That's just the fact that we seem to be on a runaway train to Trump Biden again. And there's literally no one in this country that wants that. And yet somehow this system is just setting us up for that situation. Like I will go and I will watch the details and I'll see how it goes. But if the overall system is leading to something that nobody wants, I don't know. I don't know how to be inspired by
that. To keep with that metaphor of the runaway trains, there's a very good chance one of those trains will get lost and another one will slam into some cars for fun. And so maybe, maybe neither of them will get to the finish line.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. We've definitely seen in this country before where all the pundits and pollsters told us that someone was a shoo-in and then she definitely was not. So,
92.
Don't talk about Jeb Bush like that.
That too, yeah.
Not 92 at the beginning. Justin, you'd probably know better than me, mm-hmm. but 92, if you'd asked anybody, they would have said 92 was a race to determine whether Gary Hart would lose hard or lose well to George H.W. Bush, who was clearly going to be reelected.
That is Paul Tsongas erasure.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a pretty wide open primary. Tsongas.
Really, there was a Saturday Night Live sketch called Who Will Lose to George H.W. Bush, yeah. where they all talked about how they didn't want to run. And that's like part of why Clinton was able to ascend was that a bunch of the big Democratic heavy hitters were like, not this time. This is a stupid. I'm not going to use my political clout in a clearly.
Well, Moonbeam Graham.
Sexy saxophone.
Mm-hmm. Moonbeam Graham from California. That was his moment to shine. And he wound up
Moonbeam?
Falling. Yeah.
Yeah. Never heard of this person.
The governor of California, probably during your childhood.
Oh, I don't think I've ever heard him.
Is it Graham? Is that his name?
Moonbeam? Who's
was it Moonbeam?
I don't think it's Graham.
Am I thinking of a wrestler?
It's. I mean, I know who you're talking about with Moonbeam, but he's like the guy that came back like 5 years
yes.
ago.
Yes. All right. Moonbeam. California. Uber Alice. Jerry Brown.
That's
sorry,
it.
Jerry not Graham. Okay. Brown. Moonbeam
yeah.
Brown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm not that Jerry stupid. Brown.
Not you're not that stupid. I'm at least half stupid.
Well,
I'm at least half stupid.
The two of us together make one whole
make
person.
One full stupid dummy.
And you're dumber for paying us.
There we go. Yeah. No. So yeah, that 92 was a big car crash that eventually Bill Clinton comes out on top of, but a lot of it was an assumption that H.W. Bush was going to extend the full 8 years of the Reagan Revolution,
mm-hmm.
especially considering his popularity after the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I know there's a chance that things can happen, but right now I just find the whole thing unbelievably depressing. So bring on the pizza.
All right. You're impossible because you were the one who's screaming. Let them vote. Let them vote. The people need to vote.
Yeah.
People need to vote. And now I'm taking you to see the people voting and you're like, gross.
I
don't like it.
You're just asking me to be inspired by Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy. Whatever his last name is. Like these people don't. That's the other thing, too. We are going to see some of the people I despise the most in the world try to be the most powerful person in the world. None of these, like Nikki Haley, shameless warmonger, Donald Trump, Vivek, I don't know who he is.
The Vivek, frat entrepreneur?
Yeah, yeah, Vivek racist.
Sure, okay, I don't know. But that's the thing, I don't do politics, but I don't find any of these people inspirational. Like, I would like to see Marianne have a chance, but the Democrats aren't having a real primary. So it's just like, there's nothing here for me. I'm going to watch people say horrible things that I don't agree with and then watch maybe one of them win. Like,
well, I mean, New Hampshire will be a real primary where Marianne Williamson is running as a candidate. I mean, she can beat Biden if Democrat. Yeah. In fact, she's got a better edge than anybody because Biden's going to have to do a write-in campaign. So
yeah.
In New Hampshire, you might very well see the Democratic people.
I don't know how much she's been campaigning. She had a bunch of her staff quit, and I don't know how much she's been on the road. But
yeah, I mean, I'm. Here's the thing. I am so not excited about this that it can only go up. Like, honestly.
You want
to
know what? That's a good point. Yeah. I should stop trying to make this a thing. You are not excited, and I think you are going to be charmed by Iowa. You'll be chilled, but you will be charmed.
I will be cold. I will be able to dress like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and fit in. I mean, that does feel good. So,
well,
I got that going for me.
Let's talk about something a little bit more cheerful.
Mm, yes.
Jeffrey Epstein. Mm. A New York judge will soon release nearly 200 names linked to Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell's sex trafficking case, potentially exposing associates of the disgraced financier. This follows a deadline for objections to the unsealing of the names stemming from a 2015 defamation case by victim Virginia Giuffre against Maxwell.
The case, settled out of court in 2017, revealed the names through legal depositions. This development could bring significant public attention to those associated with Epstein and Maxwell, many of whom have been anonymized as John and Jane Does in legal documents. The potential release of these names is unlikely to lead to new criminal charges, as federal prosecutors considered their work concluded following Maxwell's conviction and Epstein's suicide, air quotes, in 2019.
Yeah, however, I'm surprised they didn't say alleged suicide in that article, by the way. He didn't kill himself. Continue.
There's no way he killed himself.
He loudly said, I'm not trying to commit suicide, when they said he was trying to commit suicide like 2 days before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway. However, the unsealing could embarrass many high-profile figures. The list is expected to include a former U.S. president, actors, academics, and a British prince, all scrutinized for their connections to Epstein. While no allegations of wrongdoing are made against some, including former President Bill Clinton, their association with Epstein, revealed through the flight logs and other records, have drawn public interest. The impending disclosure could offer a deeper insight into Epstein and Maxwell's network and interactions, both before and after Epstein's 2008 conviction. The latest news on this is that the list will now be revealed on the 21st of January after a judge ruled that there was a safety concern with somebody on the list. Jen,
yes.
Does the confirmation of these names change anything we know about the situation once they are released?
Maybe.
Okay.
Because I think that if we are able to find out that some of these famous people that, because I don't like the whole guilt by association thing, like, oh, you met this rich guy and you asked him for money in this political weird system that we have. I don't necessarily think that means that you now have sex with kids. So we're doing a lot of guilt by association stuff with Epstein that I don't think is fair. However, in these particular documents, if we do find that some people that we've put in positions of power are more in that hanging out in the island type situation, I think that could be informative to know. And I also think that it just speaks to character. The ones that were hanging out with him after the conviction. So like we hear about Bill Clinton and Epstein a lot.
The first conviction.
And yes. Yeah.
Because he was brought up on charges back in the aughts, mm-hmm. and seemed to be going to jail.
Well, deal they worked out was he had to go to jail during the day to work.
Yes.
And then he was allowed to go back to his mansion. So he did, like, he commuted to jail.
He got a sweetheart deal of all sweetheart deals, then was back out on the streets until everything wound up falling apart in the case that eventually led him to a room where a bunch of sleepy, weepy guards couldn't catch him trying to kill himself.
With a lot of broken cameras.
A broken camera.
Yeah, there was that first conviction where it was like, you knew that this guy was gross and that there were children involved and he was still out there and he was still rich and there were people
described as a pyramid scheme that girls would recruit other girls to be fed into this pipeline.
Well, Ghislaine is the queen of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so if you're Bill Gates or Stacey Plaskett, who are still hanging out with this guy, still asking for favors. I mean, Stacey Plaskett, she's one that I think we need to have a lot more attention
to. Who is Stacey Plaskett?
She's a representative from the Virgin Islands. She's their current representative in Congress. And like, yeah, she's a delegate, but mm-hmm. still, she's in Congress. She's got power.
Biden just vacationed there. Got a hell of a sunburn in St. Croix.
There you go.
Nice.
She was helping Epstein in some way to change the laws to allow girls to more easily come to the Virgin Islands. I mean, we're talking icky shit here. And I want more details about that. So out of all the people that are named in this, she's the one that my focus is on the most. Bill Gates, I also think, is an interesting one because he was another one that was hanging out with Epstein all the time after the first conviction. So I think seeing the names now and lining it up with that timeline will be instructive when we're looking at these people and trying to judge, like, are you gross or are you a decent human being? Because I think if you're hanging out with him after that, guilt by association is a little bit more fair.
Heaton?
Let's all take a deep breath about this list. He hung out with a lot of people. Academics like Noam Chomsky. Maybe some comedians. Maybe some pundits. Who knows? Who knows? I think the important thing is, like Jen said, guilt by association is a bad thing to pin down in most instances.
And just because you went to an island because a billionaire invited you doesn't mean you diddle children, right? Okay, that's all I need to say.
Now I'd like to read a few words from my lawyer.
Yeah.
It reads as follows. I don't know what it means. I do think it's important we keep talking about Epstein.
Yeah.
I do think that there was enough there for us to be wary of that a further understanding of this entire process is worthwhile. It is very weird to me that we have not gotten more names off this list. If anything, it shows you exactly how powerful the people on the list are, that we are still waiting. And now it comes with all these caveats of like, well, one's dead, the other's in jail. So I guess it'll just be kind of embarrassing that Prince Andrew is revealed yet again to have been.
So when we say the list, are we talking about Epstein's black book? Or are we talking about an actual flight log? Or are we talking about people that went to the island?
Flight logs have been out.
Okay.
These were the anonymized names in the lawsuit filed, the civil lawsuit filed by one of the
Jennifer Gouffray.
Clinton was number 36 or something, apparently. Yeah. So every time you saw like person number 36, like that was him. So we're going to be able to match those.
These are the people in the lawsuit mentioned by one of the girls, Virginia Gouffray,
and anybody else that was brought in to support
all the depositions.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So there could be a lot there.
Yes.
I'm excited.
Do you think there has been a pushback of like, oh, okay, well, delaying this list release? It was supposed to come out yesterday. It's now going to be delayed until the 21st.
3 weeks from now?
Yeah.
I still don't know if we're ever going to see it. Like, they'll think of more and more reasons for us never to see it.
There's somebody going, look, Chomsky's going to die soon. Just let him do it, you know?
Epstein targeted nerds.
I was thinking about this earlier today. Like, what was he up
to? And that's the crazy thing is that, like, he could have a conversation with nerds, and then all of a sudden, oh, come down to my island. Like, look, what's a thing that a career academic doesn't have a lot of access to? Probably pliant women.
I mean, again, like, there's two sides to the Epstein thing, right? Like, the thing we're all horrified by was the girls, the underage girls and their treatment, all of that. He was also a billionaire that was showering politicians with money and making deals with people, and he was playing the role of connector. Apparently he was a very, you know, charismatic guy. People liked him. And so in the money game, I mean, that's just how things work. Like, billionaires can throw their cash around and make friends above their stature. That's something that I do think we should be examining just as gross in general, because it is interesting. But I do think that it is important to make a separation between the people that were involved with the girls. Hello, Prince Andrew. And the people that were sucking up to him because he was a billionaire, there is a difference there. And I think this list is going to help us differentiate who is in which category.
Prince Andrew couldn't have done it, according to his own explanation, because he sweats too much.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. He sweats too much.
Real quick, I sweat a lot. Throwing that out there.
And you're also a kitty fucker, so...
Jesus Christ!
Thanks, Jen.
Calm down, Aaron Rodgers.
When the list comes out and I have exonerated, I will have you eat your words, madam. I wonder when I looked at that list of people, because
it wasn't words back in 2012.
Steven Pinker was on there. Noam Chomsky was on there. There were a bunch of academics.
Lay off Noam. He met him like once.
I'm not doing it to pick on either of them. I like Steven Pinker. I like Noam Chomsky too. I'm not doing it to pick on him. What I was saying is that I was interested looking at the list of people that he was cultivating, and I wonder whether it was Epstein doing this intentionally to enmesh himself with high profile people to create a smokescreen and make it difficult to take him down, or B.
It worked.
Did he not ever think he did anything wrong and was just like, oh, no, that was just this misunderstanding. I want to go talk to these people because they're high profile people and I'm a billionaire making these salons.
Are you ready for Conspiracy Corner?
Yes.
Yes.
Certain elements of the internet hypothesize, especially when he got out of trouble back in the aughts, that if word is coming from on high to keep this guy in the mix, who does that really service? And some believe that, and the exact organization varies, you know, depending to taste, that it, he was essentially a honeypot for intelligence agencies. And
oh,
that
yeah,
if that. Intelligence agencies can get dirt on everybody by putting them in the situation where they're dealing with this total pile of garbage, then that means the intelligence agencies have leverage on everybody.
So what, why did he kill himself then? Why did the intelligence agencies not take care of this fellow?
Well, I think they did.
I mean, they just killed him at the end when they were done with him?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again.
Allegedly.
Your conspiracy, you know, can include whatever you want. The conspiracy kits are like a make your own taco kit. You but know, you can put whatever you want into it.
Yeah. And if you think about this particular conspiracy, like you have a guy who's working with the intelligence agencies, which means that if anyone can spill like what the intelligence agencies were doing, it's him. He's the one you have to shut up, not Ghislaine. It's him. And so it would make sense. And who else would have the access to the cameras and the guards and like who else could
Queen
do
of England?
It?
I don't think so for two reasons. I don't think he killed himself. And the reason I think this is just if Epstein didn't kill himself, let's accept no powerful person in America would ever kill anyone under any circumstance. Because if ever there were a situation where some power people want somebody whacked, it's Epstein. So I think he didn't kill himself. So noting that I've got a foot in this conspiracy door with you, I don't think he's an intelligence honeypot. That seems like going a step further than they would necessarily need to when they could just send in the actual honeypot that's getting fucked. And two, I think the guy was smart enough to have an insurance plan where if he was being manipulated by intelligence agencies, he'd have some kind of dead man's tripwire where if he dies, stuff gets released to
him. You have a very high opinion of Jeffrey Epstein.
He did die and that didn't happen.
He did. No, what I'm saying is like if I theoretically – if I had been on a bunch of planes owned by Jeffrey Epstein, if I had been to this island multiple times and maybe I'm just theoretically I'd Eiffel Towered somebody with a former American president and an academic who's a linguist, I would definitely have got some dirt on all of the people involved. And I'd have given it my friend Jennings and said, Jennings, if I ever hang myself, release this to the newspapers immediately. That way I could tell them don't fucking allegedly kill me because or allegedly suicide me because I've got this dirt on you. So I'm thinking if he was being used as a pawn by the intelligence agencies, he would have had something like that as a card to stop them from murdering
him. So he did
him.
It twice?
Huh?
Twin Towers.
Who could even recall?
Never forget.
Where, you know, frequent flyer lines and you know, the a lot of people say I should spend more time in beaches to understand hammock culture and warm thing, volleyball.
That would have been the most shocking element of you being on the Epstein list is you voluntarily going to a beach.
You see these pictures of me just with my arms folded in an old-timey bathing suit, being hot and angry, going like, is there air conditioning on this fucking island? You, the teenager, the naked teenager, come here. Is there air conditioning here?
And then she'll fan you and feed you grapes.
Not illegal.
Not illegal. Not illegal.
Come on
legal
here.
To do that.
I'm not looking. You can even see the photos.
the deposition of just as I felt Prince Andrew's hot breath on my neck, I'll never forget the man in tweed whose name I never heard screaming about why the sun was rising so early.
He kept talking about how a beach was just a desert with a hole at the end and some dead fish. All he talked about was that. He never tried to touch any women. In fact, he was disgusted that we wanted to be on a beach.
I tried to approach him when he said, ew, sweat.
Gross. Did you guys watch the last season of The Crown and notice that Andrew was just not a factor? There was one scene where they mentioned him. The rest of it, like anytime Charles needed a sibling, it was always Anne.
No, I still like, haven't watched it. I can't get over the fact that they made McNulty Prince Charles.
It's the last season is so
Nick
bad.
Nolte?
No, McNulty from The Wire. Did you ever see The Wire?
Nick Nolte would be a fascinating choice.
That would
I would
be
watch it if Nick Nolte were playing.
Recast the
Isn't
crowd
he
with
like
only
90s?
Americans.
Uh-huh. He's not sexy anymore.
Huh? But neither is Prince Charles. It would have been a better casting.
I guess it would have been better, yeah.
McNulty's a dreamboat.
Yeah, he was way too hot.
Yeah.
Way too hot.
And he's supposed to be like snivelly. Like, you look at McNulty next to the lady that they cast as Princess Diana, who looks a lot like Princess Diana and does a good theatrical representation of Princess Diana. I don't know how accurate it is, but it is theatrically accurate to her public persona.
And she had the mannerisms down. She did a great job.
And you're like, oh no, these two belong together.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the defining element of Charles and Diana in real life is like, everyone was like, oh my God, I think better of you, Charles, because for some reason you're making her happy. And the second that that was not the case, everyone's like, oh, you're irredeemable. We all hate you. You're terrible.
Yeah.
You're awful.
And this show just was all about redeeming Charles and Camilla. They vilified Harry. Like, it was, this season was bad. I really,
woof.
I hated it. And they made shit up. I hated it a lot, but I did like laugh out loud when they had Andrew on for 1 second. And I was like, I forgot you were in the family. And I'm pretty sure that was the point.
Well,
because of Epstein.
Yeah. Old Epstein.
Old Andrew.
I do think it would be amazing if Queen Elizabeth fucking whacked Epstein. Like her personally, like, hello, General. I need you to take care of something for me, please. Oh, this fellow Jeffrey Epstein. It's not a race thing. No, not this time. It's because, Andy, he's a good sort, but he got himself into some trouble. So I need you to, like, gear at him, but make it look like he slipped and, hung himself on a necktie or something. All right, Merry Christmas.
Fell into a noose.
Well, yeah, also, the Queen became increasingly Marge Simpson by the end of it, but... I liked it better when she was doing it herself. She was like all of a sudden you just see this, like, what seems to be like an old world, like babushka woman, like with a walker. She's making her way.
Yeah.
She just starts tapping a security guards on the shoulder and they just start walking out, turning off cameras. Next thing you know, all the lights are out. The veil is revealed there. Queen Elizabeth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
She gives Jeffrey a hug. Yeah. Ties the wire around his neck.
Would you like some tea before you go to hell?
I mean, you would have to turn off the cameras if that is how it happens.
Of course. Yeah, that's why the cameras are on. Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong. This week on our bonus episode, we're talking about Nikki Haley's Civil War gaffe. Couldn't answer how the Civil War was started. We're going to talk about that. And also I'm going to lay out the path that Nikki Haley might well be the Republican nominee. It is not a fait accompli, as Jen continues to say.
We've got Latin
like that, Jen.
Yeah.
Fait accompli. Speak American.
I do Congress.
Like Christ.
I don't do politics.
I know. That's why we're going to talk about it. Here's something that you do engage in. Turning on power in the state of Texas. Nearly 3 years after the catastrophic Texas blackout of 2021, a significant legal decision has emerged from the first Court of Appeals in Houston. The court ruled that major power companies are not liable for failing to provide electricity during the crisis due to the structure of Texas's deregulated energy market. This ruling is likely to shield these companies from numerous lawsuits filed in the wake of the blackout, leaving affected families uncertain about their pursuit of justice. The 2021 blackout caused by a severe cold front led to widespread power outages and is linked to nearly 250 deaths. In response, Texans affected by the energy system's collapse initiated legal action against the power generators. However, the appellate court, led by Chief Justice Terry Adams, concluded that Texas law does not recognize a duty by wholesale power generators to continuously supply electricity to retail customers. The decision reflects the state's early 2000s energy market deregulation, which separated power generation from transmission and sales, altering the obligations of power companies to consumers. The ruling applies to respective cases and sets a precedent likely to affect the outcome of these related lawsuits. Plaintiffs' attorneys plan to appeal either to the full First Court of Appeals or the Texas Supreme Court, which has already granted sovereign immunity to the Electronic Reliability Council of Texas, or ERCOT, in relation to the blackout. The recent opinion leaves the question of legal accountability for the blackout's consequences, suggesting that it may be a matter for the Texas legislature, that lightning-fast body, to address. Heaton, should these companies be legally liable?
Real quick, you were not in Texas for this, although I know that you did it on the Congressional Dish.
I did an episode about it. I was here for last year's freeze.
Okay.
So it was more of an Austin thing, but not the statewide big one. But
Justin, you were here for that.
Ironically, I dodged it. Mm-hmm. I was down here looking at houses. We found this house, got an agreement in principle. And as the ice storm was rolling in,
I got to the Caribbean.
I got on a plane and I went to
the Virgin Islands.
I got on a plane and went to California to back to Oakland so we could prepare everything to move and close on the house. But the entire time you're not allowed when you put in an agreement in principle to buy a house to talk to the sellers. So we kept having to go through our realtor to be like, hey, so do we have a house still? Yeah. Like when we've agreed to buy it, we've signed a piece of paper saying we are going to buy it in any condition. What condition are we talking about right now? But thankfully, everything was unharmed by the time that that we wound up buying it. So I dodged it, although I was materially financially involved in the outcome of this structure at the time.
I dodged it as well. Or I should say I dodged the Texas snafu. I didn't dodge the blizzard. I was in Oklahoma where it was slightly worse because it was slightly further north. I started out in Wagner where my family has this old ramshackle cabin. The lake froze. I've never seen that in my entire life. I've never seen Lake Fort Gibson freeze. I didn't know what to do. So I went outside and threw eggs at it. Because I was like, I don't know when I'm going to be able to throw eggs at a frozen lake again. That's the first thing that popped. Then I knocked some golf balls at it. That was really cool, by the way. You can really get a golf ball to bounce far. And then I went to Edmond, where my parents are, check on them. And in both instances, I think the power dropped off for like an hour. We were very fortunate for two reasons. One, Oklahoma has actual winter. And so it weatherizes the grid and it just has more insulation built in. Texas doesn't do that because Texas enjoys 9 months of summer and winter lasts about 2 weeks. And so normally it's such a minimal process. There's no point to weatherizing it. The other reason was that Oklahoma is part of the national energy grid and Texas is not. Texas, when the energy grid started nationalizing, Texas in a very Texan states' rights kind of way went, we don't want to be a part of national regulation. And the only way for us to avoid that is to not be connected to the national energy grid. We're going to do our own thing. Oklahoma didn't do that. And as a result, we were fine because we were able to pipe in electricity from Arkansas, Kansas, Nebraska, places like that. So my take on the story you have is, first, I don't like the idea of sovereign immunity. I can't comment on the specific ruling of the judges in this particular case because I don't know what their decision was in terms of the legal reasoning, nor do I know the Texan state law. But the underlying mechanisms that inform that law just don't strike me good. I don't like sovereign immunity and the idea that government agencies or quasi-government agencies, as with ERCOT, which we'll probably discuss in more detail, can be shielded from lawsuits. I don't like that. If I were going to try to add some sanity to all of this, I would get rid of sovereign immunity stuff. I don't know that it'd make a huge difference. Again, I just don't like it.
Can I interrupt you for a second just to like let you know what this case was? Because ERCOT has the sovereign immunity as the manager of the grid. This case was specifically against the generators.
Yes.
So like the wind power, the gas, like those entities, because here in Texas, they're separate. So in most places in the country, and actually here in Austin, we still have a public utility. It's vertically integrated, which means that the generation, the long range transmission, the lines that go into your house, they're all controlled by one entity. Texas is different in a lot of locations where the generation, it's all basically been privatized. So you have these wholesaler generators that are selling to the electricity companies. And so what these suits were against the generation companies, not against ERCOT. Okay, yeah. So ERCOT has the responsibility for managing the grid and has that immunity. The generators don't. But what this case essentially said was because these entities have been separated in a way that they weren't before, they weren't specifically in law by the Texas legislature required to always provide electricity. And because they are prohibited by law from having a direct relationship with the customers. So it's like their customers are the electricity companies. They're not us. They're not, you know, the pizza place, our homes, all those.
They are a wholesaler to a retailer.
Yes. So here you have the retailer saying you'd owed us electricity, but because there's such a weird chain here in Texas, because there's a middleman, they actually ruled like there is nothing in law or any kind of duty to the retailers because they don't have a direct relationship. So this is a specifically Texas thing, and that immunity comes into play because now when you look at it, it's like, well, you can't sue the generators. Who fucked up managing the grid? Obviously, ERCOT. So now these people are like, well, but we can't sue ERCOT. But they actually weren't a part of this lawsuit.
Thank you.
At all.
I appreciate the clarification. My initial gut reaction remains the same, which is that I'm dubious on notions of sovereign immunity. I don't like the idea of government agencies just being shielded from the judicial system if a lawsuit is brought to them, whether it is ERCOT, which is a quasi-governmental agency, or whether it is a further down the custody chain private organization.
Well, I mean, in this case, it's really on the Texas legislature because they were the ones that didn't replace the duty that's inherent. I actually have it written down. So like with a public utility, they have a duty to maintain service at all times. And that is because they're still vertically integrated. The Texas legislature had the choice to insert the duty into law to say like, listen, you're going to be able to privatize this market, have the rates set by competition and all of that, but you still have a duty to make sure that there is electricity.
That things get out. Yeah.
Yeah. They chose not to do that. And so these judges were like, they basically threw out the case. They dismissed the case. So they didn't even hear all the arguments, but they were just saying like, we don't have standing.
The law as written is.
Yes. The law as written is the problem.
The generators, what they really wanted to do was sue the distributor. They can't sue the distributor.
Right.
They tried to sue the generators and the law said, based on what we have, we cannot, you are not a customer of these generators. Mm-hmm. You are a customer of a customer
right.
of them. If ERCOT wanted to sue them, it might be a different story, but you cannot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other side of this is whether or not there would be any difference in terms of recourse, even if it was a public utility in my mind, because yes, there is a duty, but I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of that in natural disasters in the past in Florida or in California where publicly regulated utilities go down and then all of a sudden you're able to sue the power company for that money.
Yeah. There was someone to sue in those cases like Paradise and all of those PG&E instances. Like, we weren't able to get rid of PG&E, which I think we would all prefer, but there have been massive, like multi tens of billion dollar settlements. What's different here is because of this unique structure where they separated generation and transmission, that's what caused the lack of responsibility essentially here. Because like where things are vertically integrated, there's one company that's responsible for the whole thing. So there is someone who has the duty. There is someone that you can sue. It's the unique structure of this where the generators are kind of not required by anyone. Like you said, like maybe ERCOT, but they don't seem to be interested in doing anything because they're the ones that are managing the grid. But just like this whole idea that we're going to let the market solve this, like how many power outages do we have and like have a lack of recourse before we realize that the well-regulated
utilities, a lack of power, and we are vertically integrated in Austin.
We are, but we also were able to know exactly which company did it. They were they responded to all of us. Like, it wasn't a total breakdown. Like, that wasn't a problem with generation. That was a problem of the trees physically fell on the lines, and that company got out there and fixed the lines as fast as they could. If there are lawsuits in that case, it could be that they didn't trim the trees enough.
Yeah.
But that also falls on the city of Austin. So that was an interesting thing too, because you didn't know who was responsible. Was it the utility company? Was it the city of Austin? Like, that was a different case. This was like the generators, what the people in the lawsuit were saying, which I think is accurate based on my research onto this. They were saying that those companies didn't weatherize. They weren't like prepared for this. Now, as you noted, Andrew, this was a exceptional storm, but we are seeing that there's more extreme weather in Texas on both the hot and the cold ends. And so they were saying like there's negligence here
because they didn't do that.
Because they did not weatherize appropriately, and they wound up getting caught.
They've been given recommendations to that effect as well by audits that came in to say, like, look, this is something that, because like to a point, that thinking makes sense. Like something that happens perennially at a municipal level is a municipality will not have snow plows. And then there will be a snow day that happens twice a year, and they will be unable to clear the roads, and everybody will freak out. And then from the municipality standpoint, they're like, look, like we have to maintain it. We have to buy these snow plows. Like it just doesn't make sense for us to do it twice a year. So I kind of understand that reasoning. However, in the case of ERCOT, they did have regulators or assessors come in and go like, no, this isn't just a like once a year the grid might freeze. Like this is a clear liability that you've got.
It wasn't ERCOT that did that. It was actually the Texas state legislature that came back and made it a law that they have to weatherize. But in that process, after the storm of like fixing the things that had to be fixed, they didn't fix the part where the generators have a duty to always provide electricity. So they are still legally protected because of this structure. In a case where there's like, oh, sorry, we can't give you electricity. And then the electricity company's like, well, we don't have electricity to give. And the retail customer is fucked and has no one to sue. Like the legislature did not fix that. Like when you get down to what the problem is, this case is crystal clear that that is the problem. There is no duty to provide electricity in Texas if you don't have a public utility right now.
Can I ask a couple of clarifying questions? When I read about this, everybody describes this as a deregulated energy network. Mm-hmm. But from when I read about it, it looks like it's almost like an antitrust energy network. Like they've abolished vertical integration and had more competition. So like the alternative that people are advocating for is we want more energy monopolies, but we want them to be more strictly scrutinized by the state as opposed to having competition between more companies.
Well, I mean, putting competition in this way is kind of weird to have these different generators and then the different companies get to choose where it comes from. And every customer has a different electricity company that they can like, it's just weird. It's just not done anywhere else. And so the places where the electricity grid works, first of all, it's connected to other states. So what other states would have done in this situation is just had other states send them power. And so
pussy states.
I'm going. It's the most Texas thing I've ever heard. But yes, like pussy states are all connected to each other and they work.
They need to. Not strong. I think you not strong like the Lone Star.
Do the generation alone thing is what's so unique to this. And so they were trying to do a market structure, trying to bring prices down. But that only works if you make sure that the essential service, which is generally a government thing everywhere else in the world, the providing electricity, you have to make sure that is provided. Then cost comes second to having your lights and your heat on. And that is where Texas fucked up, because they didn't make sure that the electricity generation was the number one priority. They prioritized prices over the generation itself.
And that's ultimately, I think, where the rubber meets the road. I'm not worried about the deregulation, or at least the market structure. I'm not worried about it being decoupled from the larger grid. I do think that having a duty to provide from the generators would put additional pressure on them taking the Texas legislature's recommendation seriously, that, oh, we don't want to get caught with our pants down in a situation like what happened 3 years ago, because it would be a financial, horrifying moment. It would be a definitional moment for them if they were owed this money, if they were found legally liable to do it. Now, whether or not they would be found legally liable for it, whether or not they'd be able to say that it was an act of God and there was no amount of weatherization that they'd do that would have kept everything on, that's in an alternate dimension that we could decide then. But I do think the one problem that I have with PG&E, whenever we've talked about malfeasance from public utilities, it is consequences. Mm-hmm. For the love of God. Like, there is a limited element of, you know, when FPNL in Florida would lose power because there was a hurricane, everyone understood there's a hurricane. We live in Florida. The power is going to be out for a couple days. If it's out for 3 months, now FPNL is at fault. There is a reasonable element of expectation to your utility. And when they don't have consequences, when there is no consequence for it, which Jen and I, one of the things that we've bonded over the most is like, you know, the BG&E examples that you're talking about are when their faulty power lines fell down. Like they were blown over. It wasn't a tree froze more than it was ever going to freeze and crashed on the lines like they did in Austin. This is normal ass wind that happens every year in California. They didn't maintain their lines and they went down. It happens, if not once, twice a year for PG&E. And there are no consequences ever.
Is PG&E a nonprofit, a public utility, a private utility?
It is a state-backed monopoly utility.
It's vertically integrated. So it's like that's not the issue here. Although we have proven that vertically integrated companies that are well-regulated and have consequences can function well. So it's not really this, like Justin said, like the structure that they've invented here to try lowering prices through the market, like, I mean, I think 2021 also proved that because people were getting $6,000 electricity bills. So it's like, I don't even know how well it works for prices here in Texas. That's a whole conversation that Texas can have. But there's an easy fix here, which is that you have to make sure that there is a duty to provide electricity. It could be a one sentence thing inserted into law by the Texas state legislature. They chose not to do that in 2021. And we are setting ourselves up for the next time there's an emergency for the generators to say, oh, it's an emergency. We can't provide electricity. We have no duty to provide electricity. So fuck y'all. Like that is the consequence of this ruling if the legislature doesn't change it.
So out of curiosity, if something, I don't know, there's an explosion and a power generator is unable to deliver electricity, they would be sued for failing. I mean, it's not like they didn't want to deliver electricity. They hadn't prepared in terms of weatherization and things like that. But if an emergency happens that precludes them from doing it, they would still be legally responsible for that?
They probably should be, yeah. If there's an explosion in their place because of something that they did or did not do, like there should be consequences. Like they are here's the problem with electricity. We're not talking about making clothes or restaurant. Like this is an essential service. In most places, it's treated as an essential government service for a reason. So if we're going to fuck around and make it a privatized thing, we have to make sure that it being an essential service is number one. So what you could do in this instance, if there's one generation company that has an explosion, if they have some kind of deal with the other generators to make up the difference so that their customers are still able to get their power, I don't really give a shit about your explosion because you have figured out that you need to make sure
there's some sort of redundancy in place. Yeah.
Yes. So right now they're not incentivized in any way to make sure that that's happening.
Right. In terms of like consequences, I think that's a very salient point, Justin, that there needs to be consequences to things. When you've got a publicly regulated utility, if it fucks up, what are the consequences? Like with PG&E, the state monopoly backed by California.
You can sue them. You can sue them and say, I lost my house because you didn't maintain your wires and you're admitting that you did not maintain these wires within the last 20 years and a gust of wind came by, they fell down and it sparked a forest fire that burnt down my house.
So then here the idea would be you wouldn't want to have a public utility. You'd want to have a private monopoly because if it's a public utility, it's just taxpayers.
No, again, my point is I'm fine with the way that the system's set up. I'm fine with it being a market-based thing. Theoretically, the idea is you in general get cheaper power almost all of the time with the risk that sometimes it's going to be very expensive. And at that point, you can figure out another solution to blunt those super high bills. But what I don't know, and I will leave it to anybody who is listening that I'm sure is screaming at their phone if we're saying something that is incorrect. But I don't know what the limit to that liability is. Because again,
PG&E still exists.
Well, no, that
sounds like,
well, that's
there's
a
limit
story
to the accountability.
Like,
too.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. For me, I don't know when a transformer explodes and I can't, you know, but I don't have power for 12 hours is like, okay, that's a thing that happens in the process of creating electricity, or negligence, gross negligence for which is legally actionable. I don't know what the case law is that in Texas. I don't know what the law that is federally. I don't know if I don't know enough about this situation that if, let's say, every single one of those power companies took the letter of everything that they were supposed to weatherize and did, whether or not it would have absolutely made the difference. I know I would have liked to have seen it. I would have been happier if that would have been the case, but I don't know. I do know that it is frustrating that the mechanism, if this was legally actionable, that it doesn't exist. There's nobody right now that an end consumer can go and say, you
killed my mom because she was on dialysis or something. Like, they, we know that there was at least 250 people who lost their lives because they didn't have power. That's, you know, obviously you can't bring those people back, but in a PG&E situation, we've been at least been able to get compensation for that. Or like when your house burns down in paradise, you can get the money to reestablish yourself somewhere else. Right now, those people that had devastating consequences because of the lack of generation of electricity in 2021, they have nowhere to go to be made whole.
Right.
And that's a problem. But like I said, there's an easy fix. And it's just going to be on the people of Texas to...
The easy fix is to either remove sovereign immunity clauses so that people can have a recourse in court to monetarily punish the companies that are unable to provide electricity, or alternately to require in law that companies do have to provide the electricity, or both.
I think the second one is more what they were talking about in the court case, where they were saying this is the part of the law that's missing. If this weren't missing, then we might be able to take this case, but it's not there. The sovereign immunity was really not a factor here because it's a different entity. And that's ERCOT is the grid operator that has the immunity, but this was a suit against the generator.
Now, that being said, if they did not have that immunity, would that lawsuit have been brought against ERCOT is a question.
Possibly, yes. So,
he's absolutely right. That does factor in.
Yeah, both of those things are solutions.
Noting that these are both solutions and both of them sound good to me, I do want to endorse the convoluted, non-vertical integrated market model in Texas for a moment. One of the things that we haven't brought up, you want to make sure that people that are going to die without electricity get electricity. I agree. That is a primary concern, that if something is going to be lethal or if people are going to freeze to death, that they have it, and costs need to be secondary to that. However, the costs are much better in Texas. So like the national average for kilowatt hour is $16 an hour. The Texas kilowatt hour is $14 an hour. I'm ballpark. California is about $30 an hour. So California electricity is way more expensive than Texas. So if you're somebody that's poor, you're spending $1,500 less per year in Texas. So it does result in lower prices. Were we to remove these provisions that we're talking about, like sovereign immunity or a guarantee, it would probably increase somewhat because there's going to be redundancies built in, which I'm fine with. But the overall competitive model has resulted in lower prices, which was the goal.
But you're leaving out some really important factors there. So if you're going to compare states like California and Texas, you have to keep in mind that California is in the middle of actually transitioning their energy off of fossil fuels and onto green energy, which there are expenses to doing that. They also have more environmental regulations. Texas, it's still so fossil fuel heavy. And so they're still running on this old energy. They're not doing the investments that are needed to transition. At some point, they might have to, and then this system might not work out. We also have to look at, like, if you believe in the system, fine, but this is an experiment. And every time that this happens, that people die because we don't have electricity, it is proving this experiment to be a failure. So if you actually like this idea and you want this market structure to work, you should be lobbying the hardest for the legislature to fix this, because every time this happens, you're showing that Texas being disconnected from the rest of the country and Texas having this very unique structure that was caused by deregulation. Every time this happens, whether it's fair or not, they're going to blame this.
Right.
This structure.
So, once again, I think that the Texas energy grid should be connected to the rest of the country. That was something that was beneficial to Oklahoma. I'm in favor of that. Moving the sovereign immunity. I think we're all on the same page there. Just from a cost perspective, I don't like monopolies. I think monopolies are bad. I think competition's good. I think competition's good at lowering prices. So like PG&E in California kind of scares me. Having a private monopoly that's granted by the government just generally I don't think works very
well. No one ever loses their job.
With that one, but nobody dies from any electrical problems in California. I mean, I guess it's warm enough they don't have to worry about freezing or anything like that. But
we do. We have plenty of places that are freezing cold. We have mountains. We have... I mean, California has every climate you can imagine. Sure.
But the system does work there. There are no the power outages do not happen to the point of lethality under that system.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's brownouts. There's blackouts. There's rolling blackouts. Yeah. No. PG&E is a horrible company.
Yeah. We all hate PG&E.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's there's.
So, no, PG&E vertical integration has not solved the.
That's what problem. I'm trying to figure out. Yes. I would prefer what I want is Reliable electricity, which is cheap. That is my goal.
Yeah.
And Austin has proven that with a vertically integrated public utility, we have the cheap energy. Because like right now, your house is on a public utility grid. It's not what we're talking about. Austin has its own thing. And I can tell you last year, I was in the hardest hit zip code. I didn't have power for 4 days, but I had a company that I could call. They were in charge from top to bottom. I think they did as good a job as they could possibly do getting the trucks out here and getting the lines back up. I'm very pleased with the utility here in Austin. It's a proof. There has been a proof of concept with the vertically integrated model that I think 2021 is showing us. The proof of concept in this deregulated Texan model has yet to be.
I don't think that if we added up all the examples of vertically integrated versus deregulated, that it necessarily is the proof that you are saying.
Well, I'm just saying that like there is a system we've been using all over the country.
Yes,
that has and worked. And this
it's also not worked a lot.
Yeah, but this whole Texas situation was different. It was different.
It was newsworthy for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah,
including an ice storm in Texas that knocked out power for major metropolitan areas.
And what
areas.
We are seeing right now is that there is a lack of accountability that is inherent to this particular system.
I'm with you.
Yeah, so this is the experiment. The other one is not an experiment. We know the problems with it. We know there are problems with it. I'm not saying that it's perfect. I'm not saying that Texas needs to switch. But what I am saying is in this experimental system, there is a proven flaw now. We can see it. And if Texas doesn't choose to fix it, we are setting ourselves up for trouble in the future. And this model is going to be in trouble too, because this is a fundamental flaw. That electricity needs to be the most important thing.
I think
I'm with you on your thing. Just my asterisk is I am suspicious of monopolies and would prefer a system not reliant on them.
Sure.
But
it's got to work though.
Yep, got to work, yeah. But it seems to me we can probably do that by, as we said, removing sovereign immunity or alternately guaranteeing electricity within statutory obligations to companies.
There we go. Okay. We'renotwrongpod@gmail.com. Write us your emails. We'renotwrongpod@gmail.com. Bingo writes, in the evolution of any podcast, there comes a time when it's run long enough for the bingo card. It can be copied and downloaded and the topics updated. Refresh the page to randomize the order. Friends, you can play We're Not Wrong Bingo yourself. bit.ly/We're Not Wrong Bingo. No apostrophe in bit.ly/We're Not Wrong Bingo.
Did you take a look at it?
Yeah. Did you guys not see it?
No, I didn't. Can you pull it up?
I didn't read the emails.
Oh, my good Lord. Here we go. All right. So I'll drag it over here. So in this version of it.
Arby's. I love that.
Yeah. There we go. There we go. So,
Briny mentions weed.
Yeah. If I were to go from top left to bottom right, it would be a Heaton Malaprop Patreon. We have the Dog and Pony Show logo here for the free square. The weather being too hot or too cold. We already knocked that one out. Oklahoma, we knocked out. Nice.
Yeah. We
so, now normally we're not good at catching the Heaton unintentional catchphrases, but we might have a bingo right now in this episode going from top left to bottom right.
Maybe.
Other notable one, Justin brings up AI porn. A foreign country I visited.
Wallace Florida. Howells.
Well, wait, hold on. Justin brings up porn and Justin brings up AI porn are two different squares. Probably for good reason.
Will Saddleberg. That one is a get, like we say him every time.
Yeah, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, there's some easy ones on there.
Ghost of 2000 writes, what do you think about accusations that Nader spoiled the election for Gore because it was so tight in Florida?
They're stupid.
I'll jump in on this. Let's back up a little bit because Ross Perot was studied a lot more in terms of exit polling and in terms of political science analysis. And with Ross Perot, and to my knowledge, every exit polling survey that's been replicated with third-party candidates since that time, Ross Perot, who did way bigger than Ralph Nader, Ross Perot got electoral votes. He got, do you remember what percentage of the national vote he got? Maybe 15%?
Yeah, something in the teens, mid-teens.
He made an actual splash. He got electoral votes. There were people that had to go to Congress on Ross Perot's behalf because he actually got states to vote for him. Ross Perot, when they asked people leaving polling, who would you have voted for if you hadn't voted for Ross Perot, about a quarter of the people said Bush, about a quarter of the people said Clinton, and half said I wasn't going to vote at all. Third party candidates disproportionately and consistently take voters out of the fuck it, I wasn't going to vote category. Spoilers aren't competing against the two major party candidates. They're taking people that otherwise feel non-enfranchised in the political system, and they finally give them reason to vote. So when you're looking at a pie chart, the way most people think of voting in the United States is about 50% is Republican, about 50% is Democrat. That is bullshit. That is an absolute false model. What you're looking at, let's not even talk about independents for a second, about 25% votes Republican, about 25% votes Democrat, and 50% doesn't fucking vote. That's who the third party people are coming from. And good for them. So whenever you see a third party candidate doing well, all that means is that people that otherwise don't vote are voting and our democracy is getting healthier. It doesn't mean that anybody's spoiled the election based on any actual statistical understanding of math.
Nice try, fascist. Jen?
I just high-fived him.
Why isn't President Gore here?
Monica Lewinsky, maybe? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
People were pretty mad about that.
He lost. That's why. He lost.
I don't know.
He's a loser.
The Supreme Court stepping in.
No,
and,
you can.
I would have liked things to be counted.
The New York Times and the Sun Sentinel did, and Bush won. Like, that's you know, with all available, they counted everything together, and Bush still won. Like, that's just... that's just the end of it.
All I know is it wasn't Nader's fault.
I totally agree with you. What did they want? More attention? More money? Like, that's my thing with anybody who gets on third party candidates. It's like what more advantage? What more advantage did Al Gore 2001? I think that was one of the first $1 billion campaigns. He had the backing of a popular two-term president. Like, really? Like, at a certain point, you need to start pointing the fingers at yourself and not blaming Al Gore, the Supreme Court, whatever.
You can blame Al Gore.
Ralph Nader.
Yeah.
Don't blame Ralph Nader. Blame Al Gore.
Yeah.
He was weird. He was putting things in lockboxes. People didn't know what the hell he was talking about. He thought sighing during a debate was a good idea to endear himself to the American public.
Was he made out with Tipper? Remember that? He made out with her to show that he wasn't a robot, put his tongue in his wife's mouth on national television for like 15 seconds while everybody cheered because he's not a robot.
Do you not remember that?
I was 18. I was barely paying any attention. I'm shocked that you two who are younger than me are this dialed in on the 2000 election. Like, I don't remember.
We are going to show.
I think there's two things going on with these kind of things. One is I think most people don't have the right.
Look at that.
She looks like a hostage.
Yeah.
It looks like he inflated a woman.
You just know, like, when you can see the impact ripples on the faces from the kiss, that's how intense it was coming in.
So I think a lot of people are laboring under a false understanding of how it works. Like, I think a lot of people think of it like we're Australia, where everybody has to vote. And therefore, if you voted for a third party candidate, we're not doing that again. 40% of the population doesn't vote in national elections, and way more doesn't vote down the ballot in any other election. The other reason is I think that a significant amount of people view it as an act of communion. They view it as a religious thing where you have communed with the evil religion. Like in 2016, I was in New York. I preferred Hillary Clinton between Hillary and Donald Trump, but I voted third party. Why? One, because the third party candidate better represented my values, but also practically speaking, I fucking knew how New York was going to vote. And the only way I could make any difference at all with my tiny meager vote was to push the thing on the national amount. So you go third party got 6% or whatever, but my vote did not in any way, shape or form. And I had people that go, you threw your vote away. And I went, well, no, because we have an electoral system. Literally the only thing that I could have done to make a difference was vote third party because that might have theoretically got matching funding if it got above 5% or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was amazed at the amount of people that didn't even understand how the Electoral College works, which we're shouting about all the time. But
the wrong 50% of people don't vote. We should flip it. All the people that vote all the time, How about you take a few of them off?
That's
and the other 50%.
Really interesting thought experiment. Let's say theoretically, in the next election, anybody that's voted in the previous two can't
barred.
Vote. And everybody that doesn't has to vote.
Yeah.
What that would look like. It'd probably look very different.
Probably.
I don't know. I think the people that are so checked out that don't vote are not the people I want to trust the country to.
I think let's roll the dice.
We're going to end up with Gary Coleman as president.
You know what's funny is there's a decent
Andrew Tate.
There's a decent chance that it would be way.
Taylor Swift for president.
Like, there's a decent chance it'd be way more centrist. There's a decent because the people that show up in the primaries are the ones that are like super charged up to vote like hardcore Republican or hardcore Democrat. So we end up getting more extreme candidates than the general population.
Well, you would definitely get the people that hate the Democrats and Republicans, and that's why they stay out of the whole system. Because they're just like, I'm not represented by either of these two, and there is a mistaken thought here in the United States that we have a two-party system. You hear that phrase all the time, which is a total lie. We have two dominant parties, but the system is not based on them. And 50% of us are just like, well, they don't represent me, so I have no other choice but sit out. I think that fighting the two-party system myth is going to be key to getting those people involved.
Notes for the coming year writes, next year, during the time between Christmas and New Year's, Andrew should put on his best winter sweater in his best Southern accent and declare that we are in a winter malaise.
I feel like we did that at his Christmas party.
Yeah, yeah. I was, not Christmas till I pretend to be Jimmy Carter.
So these are all the names for the in-between time between Christmas and New Year's. Roto Rooter likes, don't like Taint Week or Rectum Week.
I don't think those were the names I came up with, by the way.
To fit Justin's analogy about the resin, how about Cleaning the Pipes Week? Hot Jaeger finish optional.
Nope. Sounds like a poop.
No? Okay. Game
that
of Inches.
That is not the pipes, I assume. But continue, please.
Yeah. Game of Inches. My family calls the time between Christmas and New Year's Fat Pants Day because you only wear your sweatpants and pajamas.
I like that.
I like that.
Is it Mardi Gras? Doesn't that mean like Fat Tuesday? So I kind of like Fat Week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy Fat Week. I always feel huge too.
Yeah. Oh God. I felt just like, I didn't feel fat, but I felt like pre-diabetic from all of the sugar I'd consumed. And I had that party where I had a bunch of eggnog. People only drank one quart of the 5 quarts of eggnog ads for like a month. I was like, I guess I keep drinking eggnog. And then eventually it was like, I've drunk too much eggnog. Yeah. This needs to stop.
Baby Jesus anger intensifies. And this was a combination of a lot of emails that we got. We don't need a new word for Christmas week. The term is Christmas. People these days seem to forget that Christmas is a 12-day celebration and December 25th is just the first of those 12 days. Christmas goes until January 5th, which is Three Kings Day, which is celebrated very, very much by the Catholic Hispanic community. Three Kings Day is a very, very big day.
So I got this. Old religious studies major here. Christmas and Advent are two separate holidays, and they've always been at war from the beginning. Like, we literally have had 2,000 years now of Christmas and Advent being separate holidays. Advent, celebration of the birth of Christ, which you could celebrate whenever. It doesn't say when it was in the Bible. The reason that they chose it was a largely political decision because there were that was when the winter solstice was, and there were really big cult festivals going on in the pagan world, and they wanted to steal some of the thunder from that and go, don't celebrate the pagan festival, celebrate Advent, which they could have picked on any day. 25th of December is as good as any other day. So they picked that day. But people kept doing the pagan shit, like putting a tree in their house. That's pagan shit. They kept
all the stuff we love.
All the stuff we love. Yule logs. And I would posit that now, rather than looking at it pagan, there are two dueling holidays that we conflate as the same thing. There's Advent, which is about God becoming a human being and joining us in our humanity, which is, even if you're not religious, I think a beautiful concept. And there is what we could call Yule, whereas we celebrate the depths of winter and preparing for the next year with friends and family, which is also a lovely holiday. So I think these are both nice. And in my head, these are different things.
I'm also totally down for a 12-day vacation, so let's go with this one and not work until January 5th.
Let There Be writes, I'm pitching Light Week. Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Diwali, and New Year's Eve are all some version of a festival of lights. It encourages people not to take their decorations down too early, and lots of people are off. So it is, work-wise, a light week.
So I love this, And I also want to make a pitch that I feel like as a society, we shouldn't be taking down our twinkle lights until daylight savings is over, because January and February are so depressing. And one of the things that I love about November and December is going and checking out all the lights. It makes everything more fun. They go on at like 5 p.m. when the sun is down. I love it. And now all like this morning, they were taking down the ice rink and like all of the Christmas stuff. And the next 2 months are just going to be trees that look like sticks and depression and clouds. Like, why are we taking down the lights?
I'm with you.
At all.
I agree. And also, I'm flying out tomorrow and forgot to take my lights down. So I'm doing this either way.
Did you take down Yoda?
No, Yoda's still there.
Okay.
I've got an animatronic Yoda that says Merry Christmas on my front porch.
I think he should be there.
It's really creepy.
He's still
it's
there.
It's very tall.
It's great.
And you put it on top of something, so it's like taller than anybody.
And I can walk in. If I go into the kitchen at night, or if I go into the bathroom, I can see it looming in the window, and it always scares the shit out of me, because it looks like a guy with a sword.
Yeah.
Like a monster. With a sword. I like this suggestion. I'm going with fat pants. Like next year, and I'm not going to say week either. I'm just going to go, happy fat pants. And like move on with my life. That way other people can deal with whatever, like they could make their own. Like, what was that guy talking about? I like fat pants. I'm sticking with it.
I can't wait for that to be the last thing you say on a first date.
Well, Mike, we have that bingo square now. Happy fat pants.
Happy fat pants. Thunder writes, I'd just like to say that the concept of people flinging themselves into the fire in order to get online clout is an interesting phenomenon to you. Then people who play the online game War Thunder would be a fun case study to look at. At this point, as somebody who follows this online game closely, I've lost count of how many times classified war vehicle schematics have been leaked into the game forums to prove an argument about how some given tank in the game should work or some such. It has been at least a few dozen times that people with privileged information about tanks have leaked it onto online forums simply to win an argument.
Wow.
Jinx.
That's amazing. And then we did get a couple subjugate the earth designs.
This is amazing. The one with the hand and the puppet strings.
Yeah.
So, holy fuck. Whoever did this. Good job.
So here we go. I will show it here for the YouTube audience. There we go. That's the first one. It is a hand reaching over as the world is on puppet strings. Subjugate the earth. Think locally. Act globally.
Please reach out to me directly. I would love to have you make some logos for me. This is truly impressive.
And
this one's great, too.
This one is a withered old Gaia who is in rusted chains and then in
wilting ivy around her and a little bit of blood.
Blood streaming down her face, and then in papyrus font, subjugate the earth.
Or subjugate nature, sorry. I feel like this would have been a really good album cover for like Nirvana in 2023.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Not brutal enough. I don't like either of them. It needs to be more demoralizing.
I don't know. That second one is, I feel the depression in that one.
More.
You are such a dark soul. And yet so excited for the pizza.
I'm just saying, it wants to kill us. It's trying to kill us. We can say, oh,
we are
you
a virus. You deserve to be killed.
You, the guard on the wall.
I hate
ERCOT. You, the power generators. We should be able to sue you because you weren't protecting us. From what, Jen? From what? The earth trying to kill us. That's what.
You know, I have some evidence for your story because I went to the grocery store last night, timed it horribly, and walked out into a legit hurricane. The fucking parking lot in the HEB flooded, and I had to sit there to wait for the floodwaters to go down because I didn't know if my car would make it through. Mm-hmm. Like, it was real. And obviously, I loved every second of it.
Oh, yeah, because you're a storm.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, there were like 70. So there was a overhang in front of the door, and there were at least 70 people that were taking shelter there, to the point that the employees had to come out and yell at us and be like, you have to let people leave the store. But there were just people with carts, and like no one was going through this. And then I saw some people arrive, these two chicks in like fancy shoes. They tried to walk through the flood. It didn't go well for them.
Nice. You know what you could have used in that moment?
An umbrella.
Big fucking truck.
You know what? I did think of that because they were getting through the parking lot. Uh-huh. I had to wait. I did think of that.
Yeah, yeah. We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is Will Saddleberg. Mark the bingo board. Heaton, what's happening as headmaster of the political orphanage.
Thank you. And thank you for reminding me of that, because I like that term, headmaster of the political orphanage. I have the great Greg Lukianoff on the political orphanage this week. He is the head of FIRE. FIRE is the principal organization that defends freedom of speech and intellectual inquiry on college campuses. He wrote a book called The Canceling of the American Mind that I spend a very good hour talking to him about. One of the first questions I had for him was, somebody who works in media, it is very difficult for me to tell whether the cancellations happening on college campuses are actually increasing or conservatives are just talking about it more, because it is something that right-wing media loves to discuss. And he was able to provide the receipts on that. I could see him suppressing an eye roll, and he brought up the amount of college professors that have been canned or forced off campus since 2015 as part of the Great Wokening, or whatever you want to call it, is actually greater in amount than during the McCarthy era. There were fewer college professors that lost their job during the McCarthy
inquisition. Of course, because they're all commies.
Huh?
Commies aren't going to throw another one out of the Politburo.
The McCarthy era didn't throw out that many professors compared
exactly.
to now.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because they're all commies. So they're not going to fire each other.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway,
that's where they all hung out.
We talk about that. It's a very good episode on the nature of cancellation. Greg posits, and I like this way of looking at it, that it's not some sort of moral weakness or some sort of intellectual contagion that has infected America. Really, it all boils down to very lazy, shitty debate skills of being unable to contend with somebody else's idea. And so trying to figure out, how do I dismiss you and make you go away? It is ultimately laziness that is motivating all of this. Fascinating discussion this week on the political orphanage.
Hey, I'm excited about listening to that. How about you, Jen?
So Congressional Dish is on a hiatus for a while. Not really sure how long this is going to go, but I know I'm definitely not ready to get back to it yet. But I did listen to a really fascinating podcast. Like, do you guys want me to give recommendations?
Yes,
or should I just
sure.
like skip
yeah.
it? Okay.
Yeah.
I listened to a little show you might have heard called The Joe Rogan Experience.
Uh-huh.
And he had a guest named Brigham Bueller. Have you heard of this guy?
No.
So he owns a company called Ways to Well, and it's here in Austin. And he does like stem cells and stuff. But this interview that he did with Rogan, he was talking about like our health system as a whole and just had a really interesting perspective on like how we should be personally thinking of health insurance and our own care,
yeah.
like primary care in particular. Like, I guess the thing that really got to me, and obviously it's 3 hours long, so you need to listen to the whole thing, but he was talking about how your insurance should be insurance. A lot like, you know, you have car insurance for a sure. catastrophic yeah. accident, but for your primary care, you really want it to be separate, because the insurance companies, especially with AI, they're going to be like, their whole profit model is based off of denying you care. And with AI, when you get a blood test, they can see things in the future using your data that you don't know about, but the insurance companies will. And so it was really fascinating talking about like getting your primary care outside, even though it comes out of pocket, just like you do with your car. You pay to get your oil changes and your tires rotated and all of that stuff. And so he was making this comparison that it's really wise for us to be doing that with our health and kind of keeping things from the insurance companies because of their entire model being denial of care equals profit. So it was fascinating from start to finish. And so I highly recommend listening to it.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I think I might go and check out his little clinic. I think he sold me.
Mm. So. Oh, so he's selling the cure to the problem?
No, I don't really get what Ways to Well is, but they definitely have, you can get your blood done and they have someone, they promise that they'll sit with you for 45 minutes and explain all of it. So I did get my blood. I wanted that to happen. So I went to my actual primary care physician and they said like, oh, your vitamin D looks okay, but like take supplements. Bye. Like they spent 5 minutes with me and I don't understand the rest of the numbers. So what I really want is that comprehensive, like this is what these numbers are. This is what the trends mean. I now have, I think, 4 blood tests that I've done over the last 2 years. So I do have something where they can look and see the trends. I want to understand what's going on in my body. And so I really love.
You know, it's great for that.
What?
ChatGPT.
Yeah. I would rather have a human with knowledge to help me understand. Cause I talked to our good friend, Brian Brushwood, the other day about ChatGPT, and he told me that it will feed you bullshit because it wants to please you. So I'd rather have a doctor, but yeah, I'm looking into it because yeah. I just feel well, like no, sitting I down mean, with a doctor for 45 minutes yeah, would be great.
This is
anyway, I don't want to get into an AI thing, but
Ring of the Porn.
But that's the thing that this Ways to Well guy talks about is they're going to use AI, which I've never heard from my primary care.
They are going to.
No, they as in like the people that work in this place. I've never heard my primary care physicians ever talk about using AI for analyzing my data.
Because it terrifies them. Because it basically removes the thing that you're paying them for, which is expertise. If AI can repeat to you the same medical book, probably in better clarity than your doctor can, because it is synthesizing the data faster than your doctor remembers it, and it never gets tired. So like if you're looking for just baseline, hey, line by line, let me upload four different blood tests that I've done with this topic. Like, what does it affect? Where are my trends? Where are the either side of it? ChatGPT can do that with, I mean, look, you never want to assume that it's never going to hallucinate, but with stuff like that, that is like pretty straightforward. I joke with Ashley that ChatGPT is my primary physician. And
I think of it as my personal assistant. Like driving back from Oklahoma, I signed up at your instigation, Justin, for ChatGPT 4.0, the $20 a month thing. With that one, you can click these little headphones and you can talk to it and it talks back and it sounds like a person because it'll go, it has little human bits.
It sounds like the AI girlfriend that we talked about.
But I have a male because I'm a misogynist. And yes. So I wanted to have, one I could trust.
I have a female because I'm a misogynist.
Yeah. Okay, either way. I'm driving and I was just like thinking out loud. I was listening to a bunch of self-help tapes on my way back home. And I was like, I wonder if I should get, actually, I was going to talk to you about this. There's a bill in Congress, Jen, where they might preclude frequent flyer miles. They're looking to. There's a fight between retailers and banks.
The credit card bill.
Yes, and so I listened to a podcast that had the points guy on it, and I was like, I was thinking out loud. I was like, maybe I should get a new credit card. And I hopped on ChatGPT and was like, hey, should I get a new credit card? We started talking, and it's like, well, you should probably keep the one you have, but you could get this other one that would be better for groceries, and you could use them in tandem. And I'm like, thanks, personal assistant that lives on my phone.
Yeah. Anyways. No, and what I liked about this interview is that this wasn't a primary care that was afraid of this. He was talking about how they are going to use it and incorporate it into their patient's care.
The record, I agree with the idea that we should be redefining what insurance is. I do think that there is, I interviewed the head of, I'm not going to say the organization because I might get it wrong, but it was associated with one of the Ivy League schools. It's the medical journal for one of their Ivy League schools. And it was a guy who was AI. He was a future forward on AI. And he was saying that the biggest thing that AI can help with is the fact that right now we have a primary care physician crisis.
Yeah.
Less and less people have a primary care physician that they have a relationship with. Less and less people are able to just call somebody and say, hey, my knee's acting up, or like I had a little tightness here and there, yada, yada, yada. We don't have the relationships. And I do think that part of it is the insurance. I think it's less from what you were saying, that it is denial of care is a profit model, and more in the fact that there is a conflict of profit motives between doctors and insurance companies.
For sure.
Doctors want to jack up prices as much as they can. Insurance companies want to pay as little as they can. And that is an example of competition that is doing absolutely
harm. It doesn't do anything. America. It's a fucking, as the dude who waxes eloquent about markets, including on this episode, we don't have a functional health market in any sense. It's not transparent. You can't compare quality. Think about this. If you need to get knee surgery, how do you figure out where you're going to go? Can you look at a scorecard and see who has better knee surgeries? Can you see who has complicated? No, you fucking can't. You have to like talk to, maybe you've got a nurse friend that goes, don't go to St. David's or whatever.
Yeah.
But like it's not transparent. It's not competitive. It's not open. It's a very, very dysfunctional market. And on the doctor end, one of the things that occasionally people on the Political Orphanage pitch to me that I'll eventually cover is just direct doctors, where there's a growing amount of doctors who go, fuck it, I'm not doing this anymore at the primary care level, where they go, look,
that's what Brigham's advocating for.
Yeah. And it'll like come in, it'll be $50, you know, or like there's a bone clinic. I don't know what the proper word is, but there's a bone clinic in Oklahoma City where they just give you a menu. You come in and you've got a broken leg and they're like, broken leg, $250. But this is true. We'll fix your broken leg forever. So if you break your leg again, come in. Lifetime guarantee, broken legs. You pay us two, but that's it. And you're done. You walk the fuck out and there's no goddamn mystery bill coming for you a year and a half later. And if you catch some disease in the Caribbean and you got to go to your primary care physician doctor, and then you have to work it out with a fucking insurance company. You don't have to worry about that either.
Yeah. No, I'm for all these solutions and figuring out a way to do it. On the Politics program, it is no surprise, friends, that we are thick into Iowa. Does Nikki Haley have a path? We talk about that with Evan Scrimshaw on Wednesday's episode and go over the polls, as well as Biden's splintering coalition, polling showing that the youth, Hispanics and Black Americans are abandoning Biden. Is that something that is real or just a mirage because it's so far away from the election? And then on Friday's edition, we have the man who wrote the book on modern political campaigns, Michael Cohen. Not that Michael Cohen, the other one. He talks to me about how campaigns come together, the beginning, middle, and end of the campaign cycle. And we get into some nitty gritty on whether or not Chris Christie's going to drop out, Nikki Haley's actual path, and more. And also Donald Trump's surprisingly disciplined and coherent 2020 campaign, which has not been the case.
When I think of just discipline, tight messaging, thinking before you act, the man that towers like the sixth head on the Mount Rushmore is, of course, Donald Trump.
Look, we are paragon. We are all as surprised as you are. We are all as surprised. But that is all on Politics, Politics, Politics.
I love the storyline that Trump stinks. That's been a fun news cycle.
That Trump what?
That he stinks. You haven't seen this?
Literally stinks?
Like, literally stinks. There's all these people saying that he, like, literally smells bad. And they're describing the Trump smell. And it's
you know who's got a weird smell when you're real close to him? Prince Andrew. When you're just, I'm told, when you're hanging out with
for
Prince Andrew.
Andrew Heaton and Jen Briney, I'm Justin Robert Young, and we're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.